This episode of the Deck Tees Podcast is brought to you by Gathering Magic and CoolStuffInc.com. Become a part of their customer rewards program when you make any purchase and receive discounts on all future orders. That is CoolStuffInc.com. Episode 121 of the Deck Tees Podcast. I am your host, Erin Campbell. My guests tonight are the delicious duo behind the new and noteworthy Snack Time Podcast hosted on GatheringMagic.com. Here to talk about themselves, the show, and the community they love are Mike Linneman and Aunt Tessa Torrey. Hello.
Hello.
Hello, it's snack time!
Thank you so much for coming on the show and kicking off Frisky February with me.
Thank you for having us.
I like that.
Did you know this was Frisky February?
I did not. I know and know now.
What does that entail?
It just so happens that my next couple of guests are very attractive people. So I have you two on tonight, which you two are.
Woods.
No. So you two are beautiful men. And then after this, I am having a lady magic player who also happens to be a adult content producer, Katanomia. She's coming on next week. And then after that, I have Jared Silva coming on.
He's so sexy.
Right? I actually have a friend of mine who identifies as a straight man, and he's a judge. He's a level 2 judge. And when I told him that Jared was coming on the show, he says to me, he goes, you know, I'm a confident guy and all, but when I first met Jared, I was distracted because I couldn't take my eyes off of his eyes. He's like, I got lost in his eyes. And
nice.
Yeah, Jared Silva is beautiful, and he's coming on in 2 weeks. So this whole month is just full of just, you know, sexy guests. So
man pretty. He's man
That's
pretty.
That's awesome.
He is man pretty. the thing I enjoy most about him is, and that's very off-putting, is he's very tactile. Like, he likes to touch you while he's talking to you. And I remember the first time I met him, he was, like, touching my shoulder. And then he'd look in my eyes and be like, you know, do you need anything else? And I'd be like, no!
then you realize, like, wait, am I supposed to respond? Did you ask me a question?
Yeah, he's very dreamy, and he's very lovely, and he's also a good sport about everything, too. You know, I know some people who, if you were to comment on their looks too much, they might feel a little uncomfortable, or they might feel objectified, and he's very down. Like, he's very in on the joke. He gets it. They even have some play mats that they were making for charity where Kim Warren's partner was Team Dapper, and Jared was Team Handsome, and they had this play mat with each of their faces on it, and he just seems like he's really in on the joke, and that's cool.
That sounds fantastic. Like Kibbler, like times 30. Getcha.
Pretty much. You know, there is one guy in the community who will remain nameless that I had poked fun at for a little while for being an attractive dude. And at one point, he was at Gen Con, and he basically gave me the I'm not a piece of meat speech. I know. So he got
salty over you calling him attractive?
He did get a little funny about it. So I did distance myself from that person, and I did respect their wishes. You know, so some people are very good sports about it, and others just don't appreciate it. But Jared seems like he's in on it, which is cool. So he will be on in 2 weeks to talk about that and other things. But tonight I want to talk about you guys. I want to talk about your show, which seems to be doing really well. And I want to get to know – I know, Mike, I've had you on before, but I've never gotten to talk to Ant like this. So
we're going round two, which is always good.
Oh man.
I'm coming in with the extra flavor.
Right. you're the backup flavor.
No. Mike is my backup this time. I'm headlining.
I'm so impressed with the chemistry that you two have. Have you two actually met each other, or is this just all
We actually have not.
Yeah.
Yeah. For all Mike knows, I'm just like a hologram or something over here.
Okay, but, so you two get along very well. Like, you two bounce off each other.
It's funny, for our very first episode, I called Mike over Skype, and the first thing I said to him was, like, I'm like, how do you pronounce your last name? Because we've never even spoken on the phone before. Like, that was the first time it hit me. I was like, this could actually just crash and burn immediately and be super awkward. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I don't know. It worked out really nice.
So it balances out, because for people that don't know this Vorthos, whatever, art flavor sort of mix, that people tend to, if they're into this, they tend to choose a side. Mm-hmm. And we've discussed, Ant and I, that there's actually kind of three sides. It's you're really into the art, you're really into the flavor text, or you're really into the storyline. And Ant is the flavor guy, and I'm the art guy, and we don't have a storyline person that's like super, super wizard about it, but those people are really generally introverts, and they're sometimes hard to get on a cast and talk to. So, I mean, I've really fought against doing podcasts forever because it was always hard to have an ongoing conversation. And then Ant kept yelling at me to do this, and I'm like, okay, fine, F it, we'll do it. Okay, fine. And finally agreed to it, and we're like, oh, this actually works out. Let's keep doing this.
Yeah, it's nice because Mike and I both, we care about the story, but we're not super into, like, hammering out every single tiny little detail. Like, our cast isn't, you know, recounting everything that every character ever said and when they said it. We just kind of touch on, you know, the broad strokes. Mm-hmm. Right, yeah.
Because you two do have that chemistry that a lot of shows, I mean, you've only recorded, what, 5 or 6 shows?
Yeah, we just put up 6. Did we just do 6? I think we just put up six.
We've done it slowly. We've actually had a plan out pretty far in advance. Mm-hmm. And the reason for that is there's some pretty significant things coming in the future. So we've had to plan out, okay, crap, we need to get this done, and this done before we can do Magical Christmas Land episode here. And then we need to do this and this and this before we can do that thing. It's almost like an unlockable build that we're working on.
Sure. I was just going to say that you two have the kind of chemistry that most shows, I think, take a while to develop, and it's very impressive, like right out of the gate. That's why I was very surprised that you two had never met, because from hearing you, I would think you two were old friends. So it's a compliment. So.
That's good. Yeah. I sometimes think, like, I feel like if we met in real life, we would either we would be just a terror in whatever room that is, or yeah, we'd be like, oh, this sucks. We need to just talk over the phone.
Yeah, that's all we can do. But I think there's something else too. I mean, we're not ignorant to believe that neither one of us are very, very strong players. We have outside lives. We do sports. We have things outside of the game we have in common. I mean, hell, even our significant others are both quite attractive, even though I'm not sure Ants is real or not. So we have this common ground of how do you interact with the game and keep it public and private and separate. I mean, I have 2 Twitter accounts. Ant has entire worlds separate. So we really bonded about those sort of things really instantly without even realizing it. And then we didn't have to both grow beards and drink beer and have beer guy podcasts where we talk over magic news, you know? Mm-hmm.
I think that's important because I know I've been on shows before. I had a show before this one when I played World of Warcraft. I did a show called the 00 Podcast with my friend Ophelia. That was her character's name. Her real name was Jen. And yeah, I agree with you. You know, we were friends outside of the game as well, where, you know, she was a very big hiker and traveler, and she was Canadian at the time, and she would come to Milwaukee quite often. And we would talk about things other than the game. And I can't imagine what our friendship would be like if that's all we had to talk about, where, you know, I just imagine it would get old fast.
Well, I think you can have that a lot where you have your magic friends, and I have them too.
Sure.
I don't know if you play as often as I do, and I play maybe once a week, but most of mine is beer EDH. Mm-hmm. Like, I hang over my next door neighbor's house, and I'm like, hey, I want to pet your dog, and then I'll bring, like, my modern deck, and we'll play a couple games and drink a beer or two, and that's it. But we have other things to talk about, like just going to a store once a week and doing a tournament. There's nothing flavorful about that. There's nothing sticky to me about that.
Yeah, that's kind of like the same thing with me. Is like my, you know, the people that I play with, they're not into the flavor at all either. Mm-hmm. And yet, like, yeah, I'll get it out of my, you know, system. Like, I mean, everybody who plays Magic, you get that itch after a while if you haven't played for a while. Like, you just kind of need to sit down and play.
Right.
But, you know, I have a similar thing with the flavor. Like, I need to talk to somebody about it. And, you know, our show is almost like an outlet for that because Mike resonates on a similar level where I can be like, dude, did you see what they were doing in, like, that latest Uncharted Realms article? And he's like,
yeah. Did you read James'
article? I'm not an idiot. Like, I read it too, you know? Like, I'm over here freaking out. And he's just like, dude, chill. Like, I'm on the same page as you.
Now, Ant, I want to talk to you a little bit because Mike's been around for a little while. Like, I feel like people know who he is. I've certainly had him on before, but I feel like you kind of came out of nowhere. So let's start with you. So for people who don't know, who are you? Like, how long have you been playing? Give me a little bit of a summary on who you are.
All right. So if I had to do the really short and sweet version, I have owned and collected Magic cards since I was 6 years old, which was 1994. When Ice Age was out, I'm 27.
Okay.
I had to think about that. Jesus. I'm getting old. I had to think about it.
I find it helps if you think of your age in terms of magic sets. Where like you said, you know.
Yeah, no,
I'm
that's
like,
exactly what
Tempest
I do.
Came out when I was 13.
I was six during Ice Age.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, so I guess the best way to describe it would be that I kind of was a closet community member in that I was following everything in the community, but I didn't really have my own voice until very recently. And I think a lot of that had to do with the fact that for probably the first 10 years or so that I was a fan of Magic, I never played once.
Oh, wow.
So I just kind of like collected the cards because I liked the art and I liked. Mike makes fun of me for this because he says it's
weird.
No, I
totally do. Like, I thought he made this thing up to like impress me. Like, oh, I've been a flavor guy forever. I've been doing it since 94. No. Like, he didn't play. Like, he was the kid that bought Pokemon packs and just opened them up and like kept in a binder. I'm like, who the hell are you?
Oh,
yeah. These people do exist.
No, seriously, I have cards. I have cards that I opened. Like Mirage packs that are mint condition, not because of any other reason than like I didn't play with them, and it's not because I like wanted to and couldn't. It's just I just didn't feel like I had to because I was already getting everything out of them that like I needed. Like I collected them for the art, I collected them for the storyline, and that was really it. And like I was okay with that.
So you're one of those people who. You know, I talked about this on a previous show, how there are certain kinds of cards that will always be in demand. So, for example, dragons are a big fan favorite and angels are a big fan favorite. And there are certain cards out there that really don't see any play, but yet they still might cost a little bit of money simply because people love owning them. People love having them. Are you that type of person where, like, you know, you love a certain kind of card and you will just have it just to have it?
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I will, like, if a new card gets spoiled and I just like the way that it looks, or especially if the name is amazing or something, then I'm just like, I need to own that just so that I can look at it. Mm-hmm. And like, it can just sit on my desk. Like, I have cards right now that I just sit around, like, mm-hmm. as if they're pieces of art. I'll just, like, sit it on my desk and just every once in a while I'll look at it and be like, oh, man, that's a cool card. And that, and like, I don't have to play it. I just don't have to play. I don't. It's weird.
Now, is it true that you actually did official work? Like, you did flavor text at one point?
I do right now. Yes. Okay. I wrote for the final core set that's coming out in I guess it would be July.
Okay.
So I was on that team, and I'm. I just found out that I'm going to be on, what is it? It's Blood and then Sweat, I think.
Wow.
Sweat. So I'm going to be on Sweat.
Of course you're on Sweat. Hey.
Hey.
How awesome was that, though? You know, being the flavor nerd, you know, did the people at WotC, did they react to that well? Like, oh, this guy's really enthusiastic, or did you feel like you had to tone it down a little bit?
I have no idea. I have to assume that they did because I think... I like to think that, like, they kind of took pity on the fact that I was just such a huge flavor dork that, like, I don't know. It's kind of hard to say. I don't really know how they take it. I haven't been able to talk to them in person.
Oh, that's right. All of your work is done through, like, computer.
Yeah, like, it's all through the computer. So okay. I don't know. Yeah, for all I know, they think I'm crazy. I have no idea. But they brought me back, so I must have done something right.
Yeah. So. Now, one thing that I find really curious about you, now, you grew up on the East Coast, right?
Yes.
Okay. Now, when I think
born and raised.
Oh, my goodness. Now, when I think of ant, I think of insignificant little pests that ruin picnics. So why not, you know, Yo Anthony or Tony? Why ant?
So I'm a junior.
Okay. You're an Italian boy, though, right?
Yes.
Italian
absolutely.
Boy. Okay.
Antonio Testatore.
Oh, my goodness. Right? Everyone loves an Italian boy.
Of course. Yeah. What's not to love? I mean. So my dad was Tony.
Okay.
And I have always been very independent, and I didn't want to be Tony. I didn't want to be Anthony Jr.
Okay.
And my mom's family is from Philly, and that's what they called me. They're just like, yo, aunt, like, get over here. Okay. Aunt, get out, come get me a beer. You know, like, that's just, that's how they...
And now Mike says that to you.
Yeah. Right, yeah. Now, Aunt, stop yelling at me, Jesus.
So see, like, I probably wasn't
saying it. I email Mike, and I'm like, dude, did you see the new art? And he's like, yes, I know, I understand art. God, I'm not new.
So I was probably saying it wrong, you know, when I would think of you, I'd be like, oh, that's Ant. He's a really nice guy over there. When in reality, I should have been like, that's Ant. That's my boy,
right.
Ant.
Yeah.
I should have said it a little more boisterous. So.
Yeah.
Cool.
Absolutely.
All right, so let's talk about the show. So the show is Snack Time. It's hosted on Gathering Magic. It seems like it's been really well received so far. You haven't put out that many episodes, but I see good feedback. I see it's on iTunes. How did the show get started?
So I yelled at Mike until he literally couldn't take it anymore.
No, this is true. And how the genesis came from that, we've discussed podcasts for some time. And was like, hey, we should do this. And I'm like, no, F your face. Don't want to do it. Because there used to be a lot of actual flavor of Vorthos podcasts. Mm-hmm. They're like back in right around the Mending time when – Time Spiral came out, Future Sight came out, and everything changed. There was a podcast that came out. There was an official podcast from Wizards, and the flavorful ones were like 2 hours, 3 hours long, and it would be two people just arguing about nitpicky canon bullshit. And it was so damn boring that I'm like, I never want to do that ever, ever, ever. I don't want to be the academic nerd person. I don't think that's interesting. And there really hasn't been someone in the community that has taken an interest to say, okay, I write, you know, weekly or every other week, and I have a little extra time. Do you want to dive into some things that don't work well in writing? Because there's a lot of content, you can't do that. And frankly, since I've started at Gathering Magic, God, like 4 years ago now, there hasn't been anyone that's even been interested until Ant.
Yeah,
because you can't do it by yourself. That doesn't make sense. You're just yelling at yourself.
Right. Yeah. You really can't do it by yourself at all.
Right. Well, you and I had conversations about podcasts too, Mike. And without naming names or being shady, you know, you had felt like there was kind of a, you know, maybe just a lack of good podcasting. Where like, you know, you had said, you know, I want a podcast. I want to be a guest. But you know, I would name shows, and you just didn't seem like you were very interested. So it seems like you kind of wanted to make your own that you could be happy with. Is that true?
Well, I think that's true, and I think I took some feedback earlier on in some of my writing really harshly. I was really deviating, trying to figure out some sort of flavorful thing that would stick, something that people would give a shit about other than top 10 flavor text, top 10 artworks, look at these boobies, yay, yay. Like, there was really nothing original in me about it, and I think one of my articles was considered noise. And I heard that from one person, and it stuck with me to say, okay, if I ever do a podcast, I can't fit into that mold. Mm-hmm. I cannot be another grinder. I can't be another found new tech, because it's the same. It's no different.
Yeah.
So if I'm going to ever do something, it's got to be something that no one else does, and frankly, no one else can easily do. Mm-hmm. And I think our podcast is – I think we're getting there, hopefully.
Yeah. I think you are, and I certainly say that to anybody. You know, being a successful podcaster myself, people often ask me, you know, what do you think I should do? What do you think I need to do? And the number one thing I always say is do something that either nobody else is doing or that someone's doing, but do it in a different way. One of the shows that I love to plug is Magic the Amateuring. I think that they were spot on with targeting a demographic that wasn't being targeted, which was new players. Having a show that had two women on it, which in Magic is revolutionary, and the way that they go about it, being the theater nerds, the musical geeks, and having musical episodes, no one's done that before. And you know, they are the one example that I point to of this is how you should do it. You know, find a niche, fill that niche, and I feel like you guys are doing that too. You know, you saw an area that was not being covered, and now you're doing it, and that's wonderful.
Yeah, do you remember you actually said those exact words to me? Do you remember that?
Yeah.
I was asking you on Twitter, like, I was trying to figure out, because your podcast always sounded really well, like, recorded, and I was just fishing for information, like, what do you use to record, blah, 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 and right away, you're just like, make sure that you are doing something that nobody else is doing right now, because otherwise, what's the point, you know, and I completely agree, like, to just replicate a podcast would just be a waste of time, and
yeah. Yeah, and I feel like you guys are doing that. Like I said, I've listened to the first couple episodes. You know, there were some sound issues early on, but sound can be fixed. You can't fix chemistry. You can't fix, you know, there are just certain things you can't, you know, there's an insult that I've heard people say before, and they say, you know, I can always lose weight, but you'll be ugly forever. Kind of, I've heard that before, and, you know, and then there are just certain things you can't fix. And I feel like, you know, talent and chemistry are just sort of natural things. And I like that in your show. So what has it been like being a new show on the scene? Like, you know, letting people know who you are, you know, being the new kid on the block. What has that been like for you guys?
So I was sitting today in getting my wife's car fixed, and sitting there looking, playing around on Twitter, whatever the hell. And we have a Twitter handle at SnackTimeCast. And I think we have, you know, a couple followers, I think like 30 or something. And it finally sunk in that, oh crap, people actually are listening to this.
Yeah.
People actually care.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought this was just something fun Ants and I were doing for giggles. Maybe I should probably think about content and think about strategy and using our Twitter account for that.
Yeah, it hit me like it was like maybe a couple months ago. I think we maybe had three episodes. We hadn't even interviewed Ethan yet, I don't think. Mm-hmm. And somebody had tweeted like, "Oh, I'm doing housework right now and listening to Snack Time Cast." And I just pictured this person like I have no idea who they are. And I just pictured them like walking around the house dusting or like vacuuming or something. And like me and Mike are yapping in this person's ear about art and flavor and like God knows what. And I was just like, oh my God, like people that aren't me are actually listening to this show.
Yeah, like, we had that with Aaron. Where Aaron, you mentioned this to me. Oh, you guys are listed on iTunes. And I'm like, we're on iTunes?
Yeah.
No idea. Like, oh, you guys are doing well. Oh,
yeah. The only piece of advice I would give you is to never lose that feeling that nobody's listening. Because I feel like my best work comes when I don't care. And I've heard this from other podcasters too. Is once they know people are listening, it's really hard to they automatically flip a switch. And it's hard to describe what that switch is, but you know, you really have to record as if nobody's listening, because if you get too hung up on that, the show will subtly change where you won't, you know, it won't be obvious, but you will find yourself like, you know, oh, becoming more self-conscious or holding back more or something like that. You know, you've really got to go into it with that beginner attitude and stay like that. Like I feel like that's
hungry.
When exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, I was actually watching this interview with Howard Stern, and he was talking about his show and how he said that like the vibe of their show, what he always wanted was he wanted it to feel like the listener was just another person in the room, and it was just a bunch of people kind of like hanging out, talking about whatever the topic was. And he said like when he was first starting, they would put a dummy in the corner, and they would just pretend that was the other person, like that was the listener.
Yeah.
And they were just part of the group or whatever. And so when we were recording that, I told Mike right away, I'm like, I want this to sound like we're just having a conversation, like just me and you, and the listeners are just there. They're just, like, we're all just having this big group conversation about art, about flavor, about whatever.
Yeah, that's how you should do it. Exactly.
Yeah.
So what are the future plans for the show? I know you talked about having a little bit of a framework when you got started. You know, where do you see the show going? Are there any guests you'd like to have on? Like, what can you share with me about that?
Sure. they're okay. So as part of the magic R&D, everyone kind of knows Mark Rosewater because he's always yapping. People know Aaron. People know Matt. I mean, people know a few people that are always creating content.
Doug.
The creative team, Doug is the only member of the creative team that has an output of content.
Mm-hmm.
No one else gets interviewed. I mean, the art directors, it took me 3 years to interview Jeremy Jarvis, the head art director. And they have two other art directors that no one knows about, no one talks about. So I've been slowly working through there, and since I worked on flavor text writing, you know, ages ago, and I was terrible at it, we do have some relationships there to say, you know, there is some content that we'd love for you guys to get out that you can't cover in Uncharted Realms, you don't want to put it in a forum, you can somehow get into the community without having to, you know, do leaps and bounds through PR, and we would love to be, you know, that voice for you and make that opportunity for you. How do we do that? And to our luck, it's been receptive to say, oh, cool, sure, what do you think? And at this point, we're still trying to dive into who are the great guest stars. We put a question out there to say, do you want to hear from an art director? Do you want to hear from an artist? Do you want to hear from a retired artist? Like, who are the people? And a lot of it is, how does the art get chosen? Why is boob plate still prevalent? How are we depicting race? Like, really meaty, difficult things to write. Mm-hmm. But in a podcast, you can totally talk about, and it's not as misinterpreted as, yeah, as text, and you can take a, you can't take a sound bite or a text clip out of it as easily and share it and then have it, you know, go viral quickly. Mm-hmm. So that's one thing that's going to happen. I don't know when, soon-ish, and I don't know if you heard anything recently.
Yeah, I mean, like Mike was saying, like, we really wanted to touch on a lot of the topics that would be very difficult to write properly, just because of, like he was saying, like, you can easily misinterpret something that somebody writes, because you know, when you hear someone talking about it, you can tell by, like, the inflection in their voice and stuff,
right,
what their opinion actually is on the topic, and some of this stuff, it can be touchy, and if you write poorly or use the wrong, like, phrases in an article, you can easily offend people that you may not be meaning to offend, mm-hmm, you know.
So. And at the same time, it's hard, it's easier to get alumni people on podcasts than to say, can you give me six paragraphs for an article?
Yeah, yeah. Answer these questions immediately, please. Yeah.
Especially if you have the kind of conversational style that gets things out of people. Like, if you're somebody that makes people feel comfortable where they will talk to you,
right,
you know, that's something you can do vocally that you can't do with text. You know, you can't send somebody a question and have them go, God, that question just made me want to talk. No, but you can, you know, say the right things or word it such a way or create an atmosphere where they feel comfortable enough to open up to you.
Right. And there is something sticky about having to react to someone, even over over Skype. The best example and answer that I've talked about this is, we need to get to conventions and talk to people in person. Mm-hmm. So, for example, we'll steal Randy Post for a half an hour and say, okay, we're going to talk about your time as a concept artist. I don't give a crap about you drawing penises on things or altering. I don't care. I want to know, how did it, what was it like sitting next to Todd Lockwood, and he's pumping out dragons every day, and Mark Tadine is over there making crazy monsters. How did you get perspective? How did you stay motivated? For people that, you know, want to work in the field, people that want to be artists, people that want to be creative members, there is no roadmap. There is no way for people to learn that unless you really drag it out of people in podcasts, in my opinion.
That kind of reminds me a little bit of how, you know, pro players like to describe their success, where, you know, sometimes you have a pro on the show and they've just won a Grand Prix, and people want that roadmap. They want a set of directions that they can follow to be a pro too. And you have those pros where it's like, so, you know, how did you win the GP? Oh, I'm just good.
I'm lucky today.
Well, tell me what led to your deck choice? Did you really look at the meta? I just picked this deck because it was fun.
Yeah.
And I feel like sometimes you see that with the creator types where it's like, you know, okay, I'm interested in getting into this field. How did you do it? I just picked up a paintbrush and it just happened. And it's like, yeah, no. Like,
there's people you could pull this out of. Like, if you sat down with Gavin and say, okay, you knew you needed to do something revolutionary because applying just wasn't working. You did overextended, but who was your mentor before you got there? What was the six pieces of advice that led you to say, okay, I need to do this. I need to get buy-in from people. I need to swing for the fences. And creatives need that too, to say, how do I take the flavor test? Is there a test? Is it hard? What do I do? No one really knows those things.
Yeah.
And some of those things are kind of guarded secrets because you don't want competition into writing flavor text
right,
or being
I was
a magic
just
artist.
Say that. It's almost like being a musician, like guitar players. They sit in their room and they come up with all these crazy riffs, but then they're afraid to play them in front of people because as soon as you do it, then somebody can steal it. Mm. You know, so you want to help other people because, like, in my case, I would have been writing flavor if I knew. Like, I didn't even know that just your average person who's a fan of the game could become a flavor text writer. Like, that never crossed my mind until I read about it in one of MJ's articles on Gathering Magic. And I was like, oh my God, like I could do this. So I hit her up and I was like, how did you get into that gig? Like, I want to know so that I can do it. And fortunately for me, she was like helpful enough to point me in the right direction.
Sure.
You know, but when,
at the same time, there's been people who haven't. I mean, there's
right. Like there are some people who they get that question. Sorry, go ahead.
All the time. How do you become an art director? How do you do that? And I'm like, oh, cripes. And then you can do a little research and be like, all right, this person is just a Muppet. No, I'm not. No, not going to happen. But in general, the more transparency you can build, it's better for the community.
Yeah.
And
right.
Frankly, it gives people a little more respect for some of the creative elements that go into it. Because artists never get enough respect. They never get paid enough. And frankly, when there's a line of 50 card stacks and not a single one has a tip, it's like, you know, you guys need some help. You guys need some PR right now. Let's help you do that.
Yeah.
And that's definitely something like that I've been thinking about lately, is that I kind of wanted to create a little, maybe not so much an article, but maybe like a blog post or something that kind of lays out how it felt to go from like that kid who sat alone in my room, like just reading flavor text and having my own like little world, to buying a pack of the core set that comes out this summer and opening it and seeing like something that I wrote and like what it took to get to that point, just so that maybe someone else who like me is sitting in the room just reading flavor text going like, oh man, I would love to do this. They could kind of see that roadmap of like what I went through to get there, and they can either make a parallel to something that they're trying to do or use that as a way to get to what I'm doing, but quicker than how long it took me, because I'm getting old now.
27, you fossil.
Super old.
It's terrible.
I look forward to you being like that, you know, that studious Italian with like the touch of gray and the gold necklace and maybe a Hawaiian shirt,
chain.
Right?
I want to get like the Pauly from The Sopranos, like that gray on the sides, like the gray wings. That's what I'm going to get.
Oh, my God. Stuff by cannoli. So being that you two are sort of these, you know, these Vorthos, you know, these master, or these purveyors, you know, if you will, well, where would you say we're at with Vorthos right now? Like, were you happy with Cons of Tarkir? I know, Mike, I had you on for Theros. We talked about Theros's, you know, we graded Theros, if you will. Like, have you been happy with the way Vorthos is being, you know, portrayed right now? Or where do you think we could fix that?
Go ahead. You want to tackle it, or
you cover Tarkir. I'm going to cover Commander.
Okay.
All right. So one thing that I've really noticed in this set is there are so many layers to the actual flavor of like the plane of Tarkir that a lot of past planes haven't gotten, like as far as like a detailed treatment of what the story is actually doing. And, you know, a great example is the article that just came out on Wednesday. And like, if you compare the Mardu of, you know, past Tarkir to the Mardu of like the present that we knew in Cons, there are so many parallels that they're like sneaking in their writing that's creating like these illusions of why Tarkir is such a broken world, like compared to its past, and like helping you realize that this whole like time travel fixing the plane thing makes sense, and like that we're actually going back to a healthier world and stuff. Like their writing has gotten really, really good really quickly, and it's something that as a fan I've been really excited about. And also like as a writer for them, like I want, it makes me want to get to that level so that I can look like one day, you know, Magical Christmas Land, whatever, go on Uncharted Realms and be like, I contributed to something like that.
Mm-hmm. Were you happy with the way the time travel was handled? Because that was something I think a lot of people groaned at when it first was revealed that this was going to be a time travel set, because that's something that can be an obvious trope. It can be an easily mishandled trope. And I know people around me were like,
Well, that's the thing. The thing is that like, it can be easily mishandled and like, we haven't seen the end yet. Mm-hmm. So I think until Dragons comes out, like we won't know for sure exactly how they did it, but I think a lot of those groans just come from like whenever you say time travel, people get nervous, right? Because, you know, it's very easy to disrupt one thing that will just totally unravel everything that you've spent the past 6 years developing, right? And one of the things that creative kind of like struggled with for a long time is that they only worked on one world a year because of the way sets came out. Like now they're going to get to do two a year, right?
Yeah.
But before they had one a year and their stories progressed pretty slowly, right? So you spend 5-6 years building up these new characters and building up these new stories, and then you're like, ah, time travel. And it's like, well, you could totally derail everything that you just spent all this time. Like, we just got to know all these characters, and like, please, please do not screw it up. And I think that's what a lot of fans were like worried about.
And Andy, you were here during Time Spiral. So there was a lot of content that was built already that couldn't be changed. So I know a lot of people really grumbled about losing the novels and comic books becoming less frequent. And they tried webcomics, and then they did Path of the Planeswalker in print. But one thing that they were really stuck to is once the novels were written, they couldn't change anything. If the writing was bad, if the story was set, they had no choice but to stick with it.
Yeah.
And you can never get enough focus groups, never get enough data to really understand how much people will love things or hate things. You just don't know. And now, since Doug isn't writing weekly, and instead it's Uncharted Realms, which is super big chunks of a novel, but yet you can change it at a moment's notice, it allows them to be a lot more responsive with any storyline, any flavorful things. And by doing that, it allows them to have trans characters. It allows them to have these open-ended worlds. It allows them to have Ashiok, who is unspecified. Before, that was not possible at all. And when the comics ended with Ashiok, that was the turning point. And we will never go back to that. So I think any sort of time travel, since it was kind of struggled with in Time Spiral, because they're like, oh, crap, we could have done this a little better. Oh, we had to write that thing out in the last moment. Now it's like, oh, we got Ari Levitch, who just came on the team, and he's like, well, why don't we do it like this? And they're like, oh, my God, we didn't think of that. Let's do that. And they just can't. And it just makes more sense.
They have a lot more freedom now.
I mean, period. And that sort of ability has really run the grain through, and we could speculate to say, well, maybe there were people on the team that stood by a storyline thing or an aspect of a character that they wouldn't change, and maybe people are a little more responsive now. But I'd like to think some of the media is really what has allowed them to deviate and try new things a little more. And frankly, there's more people. There's more art directors that can say, oh, we don't have to have digital everything. We can do a lot more painted stuff now that we have time to do so.
Right.
Would you say that these changes have led to more of a demand for Vorthos things and flavor things, or are people still about the same in terms of interest level?
I don't know. I feel like the amount of just sheer Vorthos content that has been being put out by Wizards has gone up exponentially in the past like 5 years.
It's subtle though. I mean, it's really come off on a slow level. And getting back to this Commander set, to say, all right, Ethan's like, all right, Commander sets, let's do them all Vorthos and Ish, and let's see what happens. And they brought in Felden and whoever, like, lost their goddamn mind, because they're like, ah, old school flavor, baby! And they just went, what? And now, if you look at each supplemental product, because what if they said, from the vault, Phyrexia? I mean, it immediately makes you think of, ooh, Phyrexian Vault, Phyrexian Altar, like straight up Commander staples, old school legacy. Like you immediately, viscerally think of things. And they never did that in the past. And they are now. And that really gives us a deeper view of really variety of things that people could say, well, I don't care about Tarkir, but I really like Mirrodin. Give me some Mirrodin again. Well, we'll give you a little bit in a dual deck. It's like, cool, I still get something from me, even if the entire block for the year isn't about me.
So I want to talk about a specific event that happened this week, which has been the talk of the community since it happened. So Uncharted Realms, there was a story that came out this week involving the Mardu, and specifically Alicia, who smiles at death. And the story revealed that she is basically a transgender character. She's a transgender woman, first transgender character in Magic the Gathering. Made waves. The story's been on Kotaku. Reddit's been buzzing about it for days. I was one of the first to break the story because I check my websites like clockwork, so I was there at 9:59 when it published. What did you guys think about this as Vorthoses when you read the story or heard about it? Were you happy with it? Like, what'd you think?
I honestly read the story and I was like, oh, okay. And that was it. Like, it didn't even register with me. And I hate to say that. And I'm like, oh, okay. Trans woman. Oh, okay. Neat. And then I kept reading my other article. Like, it didn't even, it wasn't even a thing. I was like, oh, okay, good for them. Like, I thought I'd stop, like, when I saw Garrick and Liliana's entire artwork, which, you know, we've rehashed a billion times. And that really viscerally was like, oh, God, that's a rape scene. That's not good at all. But this was, oh, okay, that's neat. Next thing. And I don't know, I guess I expected Magic to care less about this, to be like, oh, okay, good. Yeah, it's about time. Neat. But it blew up. It totally blew up.
Yeah. I knew this was coming, to be quite honest. So the NDA that I signed when I was at the Community Cup apparently didn't go away. So there are people from Wizards who will occasionally toss me little scraps,
sure.
And then they'll be like, oh, you signed an NDA, you can't tell anybody, and it just feels like a gotcha joke, and I'm like, crap, I can't say anything. So I knew, I was told through the grapevine, through some wizard sources, that there was going to be a trans character coming. Sure. I was under the impression that it might be a planeswalker. I didn't know it was going to be a character, like a con, but I knew something was coming down the pipe, and that I right. couldn't talk about it. I didn't know who it was, I didn't know anything like that, but I knew one was coming. And I had specifically been asked for the names of other trans people in the community who might be good people that they could point to and say, you know, help us discuss this, keep the conversation going. If anybody had any questions, you can see these people. And so I gave them Jadine's name and Feline's name and Jaylena's name from Star City. And I said, these are the people that I know of who I consider to be good resources. And they sort of did with it what they will. When I read the story, I had to read it a couple times because I wasn't sure I read it right. Like, I didn't want to seem like I was making something that out of nothing.
Right.
So I read it and I was like, ish. Let me make sure. And then I read it again and I'm like, and even when I tweeted it, I was like, I think she's trans. Like,
right.
I don't know. And then other people were like, yeah, that's pretty much the case. And
right.
when I saw that, I mean, as a trans person, I mean, my jaw was literally open and I was overwhelmed. Like, I was just like, oh my God, that's me. Like, I am in a card, you know, I'm being represented. The story was written well. Like, it wasn't she wasn't a sex worker. She wasn't a criminal. She wasn't any of those tropes that trans women often get labeled as. You know, she was a warrior. She slew a dragon. And because of that, because of her battle prowess, the Mardu were like, you can be anything you want. You slew a dragon, you know? And that's how it should be. You know,
yeah.
They were like, you know, you're here for your skill. You are here. They didn't care about that. And that was so, so positive.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Well, honestly, like, that was the one thing that I liked the most about it is that, you know, I love the fact that they're, you know, trying to get this, you know, these types of things into the game, right? And into the flavor, but I like that they didn't just shove it in where it wouldn't have made any sense.
Right.
And,
like,
you know, they picked a moment where, like, you know, they have this clan where, you know, their whole, like, the whole thing about the Mardu is just the sheer fact that, like, names for them and, like, what you are, whatever, it doesn't matter. Like, mm-hmm. to them, it's like, you know, you pick what you are. You
yeah.
pick who you are. You know, and like that idea fits perfectly for the message that they were trying to deliver. And so they picked the perfect moment. You know what
yeah.
I mean? So kind of like going off what Mike said, like when he was reading it and like it didn't hit him, like a lot of that could have just been from the sheer fact that it didn't feel forced. It just made
sense.
It was just like, yeah, I could totally see that working and it's fine. It's awesome. Like it. You know what I mean? Like, it just wasn't like this thing where it felt like people were trying to shove a message down your throat or something like that. It was just like, no, this is part of the world and it's the way that it is. And it's just awesome.
I think that this happens with art descriptions sometimes, that they say, please use a diverse group of characters. And what do you, you know, you generally get white people, you get women that all look the same size and shape. But Magic's been really pushing against a lot of those boundaries. Mm-hmm. I don't think Jarvis yells at people, but when there's a group of soldiers and there's no diverse race depictions, he will yell at people. Mm-hmm. And I think some of that is finally at the point of, okay, we need to have representation here of everything. We have a goblin planeswalker in a wheelchair. Like, that registered with no one either. It's like, oh my God, this is like a 1992 science textbook where you have, you know, white girl, black girl, kid wheelchair, Asian girl. Like, straight up to do. Every night, like every book in the 90s had that crap. It looked like it was Captain Planet every single time. And and finally,
by the power unite.
They totally do. Oh, and that's why they're like, you know, we're not going to have a random trans character and we're going to sneak it in a flavor text. They're like, nope, right here, it makes sense. We're overdue. The hell, right now, let's do it. And they could have done it on Ravnica, but Mardu makes way more sense. And right. The impact is so much greater. And maybe that's why I'm just sitting there like, well, you know, could have been an Azorius too, you know, I guess. But here it's, this actually would be odd if it wouldn't be there, looking back at it, to say, oh, you guys totally should have done it there. That would have made sense.
Mm-hmm. How important was it when Doug Beyer wrote on his Tumblr and he clarified and he said, just to be clear, Alicia is canonically trans. Canonically, C-A-N-O-N-I-C-A-L-L-Y. How important is that word in that phrasing? Like, does that change anything? Does that mean anything more to you guys?
And that's the big thing that came from the Ashiok. They referred to Ashiok as a he in the comics. Mm-hmm. So there was this ambiguity of, well, Ashiok's gender isn't your business. Don't worry about it.
Right. But oh, I love that post. That post was so good. He was like, Ashiok's gender is none of your business, and Ashiok can be whatever Ashiok wants to be.
Get up out of their
saucy
facial smoke.
It was so good, yeah.
Something about facial smoke was great. You
yeah,
know?
Right. It was, yeah, get up out of my facial smoke.
But they've had it to do that. Otherwise, someone's going to write it on a forum and they're saying, no, I overheard this from a person and we were having drinks. Like, really, they've had to put down a hard hand with that. And frankly, you don't always get that anymore to get a really straight answer from a Wizards employee. That isn't that common. And I'm really, really happy Doug got to do that and that he keeps getting to do a voice for Vorthos. Right. Tumblers weren't allowed some years ago. You couldn't do that because it's too afraid of saying the wrong thing.
Yeah. And then you have Mark, who's just a whirlwind of whatever comes out of his brain. His Tumblr is, sometimes he says things and I'm like, what? I'm like, is that really right? Is that true or something? And then the next one's like, squirrels, I love them. And like, it's just, his blog's awesome. It's so crazy.
What would you say the impact of the community was of the decision to make Alicia trans? Like, what have you guys seen? Like, is this a good thing for the most part?
I think it is. I think it finally gets a discussion away from just the Vorthos people talking to each other on Tumblr posts. You know, and into the actual grinders who say, oh, there's art on the cards? What? Oh, that's what that is. Oh.
Well, even beyond that,
I was
that,
a little
like,
surprised to see that none of the pros had really talked about this. Like, you know, me being the stalker that I am with regards to my show, you know, I do follow a number of pros, and even the ones that I don't follow, I will still look at their Twitter feeds. And I was a little surprised that there was not a peep, and maybe they were practicing for the pro tour. Maybe that had something to do with it. But, you know, Kibbles had nothing to say about it. LSV had nothing to say about it. You know, and I really feel like, you know, while I'm happy with everything that happened, and I was very happy to see people like me come out of the woodwork and people that were cisgendered be happy about it, I would have really loved to have seen more of the bigger voices weigh in on it, even if just to say, I see it, I'm cool with it, move on. I was a little surprised that people had, some of the bigger names had nothing to say.
Well, I don't know. I think they probably did. But that brings up the topic of, well, simply because you're popular, do you need to take a stance on it? Or do they not feel that their input could be relevant? And that's a PR issue, 100%. And Wizards sometimes struggles with PR issues with outside people under NDAs. It's not like artists have to go through a class to be like, you know what, don't show up drunk to GPs, and don't do drugs, and no snorting coke off playmats. Like, they don't say those things. Could they? Yes. Could they do that with pros and say, you know, as part of your stipend, when there's this, please help us out with the thing. There's a way you could write it. But by not having any of that dialogue, they're like, well, I don't know what I add to this discussion. I'm not really in this. I'm a grinder. I don't know really what to say. But yet, when there's other things, they, you know, too much boot plate, they'll talk for hours on it. So I don't know. Maybe it's the seriousness of this is something that needs to happen, unless you're going to be very, very vocal in favor of this. You're just trolling, and you will be smited by people. And maybe a fear of wizards would come down on them.
But see, I feel like, you know, as a trans person, I feel like they have the ability to really get this out there. You know, like, there are people who, you know, you mentioned earlier in the show that you and Ant weren't necessarily the best players. And I'm not either, but there's a certain subcategory of the community that will listen to you more if you're good, where they will say, right, you know, you're really nice and all, but what have you won? And then at that point, they sort of tune you out. So for somebody who's good at the game to say, I've seen this story, I really like this story, you have the ability to get a whole mess of people involved that otherwise normally wouldn't be. And I really feel like we missed that.
Well, they're not Spider-Man. I mean, they don't have great power and great responsibility. I mean, they don't have that. But you're absolutely right in that. I would have loved to see up-and-coming person really stand up and said, you know, I made the pro tour once, or I'm working, I'm grinding, I'm getting ready for the pro tour, but I'm going to take 10 minutes and write a couple posts on this. I'm going to write something on Reddit to say blah, something. And no one really stood up at all. I mean, I don't know why. Maybe there was a group of them to say, you know, we're busy, don't be a distraction, kind of like how NFL teams do. But I don't think they have that malicious intent. I think they just didn't know what to say or how to do that, because people have seen maybe a backlash if they don't say it correctly. But it seems like silence was more deafening than any sort of correction they could have gotten by wording something out.
Do you think it has anything to do with that imaginary line that exists between Vorthos and competitive, where people, you know, people do feel like you can't build a competitive deck that has flavor, or that you feel, you know, I'm a competitor.
No,
what do I care where Jace comes from?
You are proof. You are living proof that you can make a competitive Vorthos deck. And it's on film from the Community Cup. And that was when I became a fan of yours, actually, was I was watching the Community Cup, and I was just like, that deck is sexy. That is the most flavorful deck. And then you creamed everyone, and I was just like, yes, Vorthos win right there. Proof.
But you know what I mean.
Proof,
Mike.
Proof.
But you know what I mean, and you could even see this in the Alicia threads on Reddit. There were people that were like, you know, well, what does this have to do with the card? What does this have to do with me putting it in her deck? You know, there is that separation there where people will say, you know, Jace the Mind Sculptor is a good card. I don't care where Jace comes from. I don't care what he's doing with the Guild Pact. Is the card good? You know, and there is sort of that separation there where, you know, people do feel, you know, if they're that's a casual thing. That's a non-competitive thing. Why do I care about that? Do you think that might have affected how this was received?
Maybe there's a good analogy there, though, to real life, where, like, you know, you can say, like, is the card good? I don't really care about the story or their background or whatever, just is the card good? You could say the same thing about a person, like, I don't really care about, you know, where they're from or who they want to be or whatever, just are they a good friend?
Yeah.
You know? So I don't think that would be a good argument that, like, they just care about the card, you know? Like, it's all the same thing. Like, a card isn't just mechanics. Mm-hmm. Like, it's art. It's there's way more to it than that. So
I think it's a percentage wise thing, and it relates to art in a way of people saying Tarmogoyf has really great art, and I immediately challenge them to say, is it because it really has great art, or is it because the card is good and thus you believe the art is good? Sure. And that happens a lot. Any sort of artist that gets a highly played uncommon or a common, Lightning Bolt, for example, Chris Mulder will not gets stopped signing those. And he's like, I've done a lot of amazing work. Why do you not care about anything else except for this one freaking print? And for players to utterly ignore the fact that, like, well, I, it's just Uno to me. I don't care. It's his mechanics. It's total bullshit. I mean, people have playmats that they choose with stuff on it that they enjoy. They have sleeves on them that they find enjoyable. But it's an overstatement of things to say, well, I play elves because I like this idea. They get to bring out a boom boom, and I'm going to kill you fast. And it could have just easily been goblins, but there's something sticky there that, you know, they don't really ever think about, but when confronted with it, they'll definitely tell you. And it's something in that vein that hasn't been examined. That might be a future topic we should bring up, Ant.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Write that down.
But you so always tell me to write things down. We're recording.
You have to address him as, yo, Ant, write this down.
Yo, Ant.
You
know? Where's Ant?
We had the receipts from the race, you know. So, Mike, you've got a bit of a side project that you're working on lately, a little bit of a contest. So tell me about it.
Oh, sure. So I wrote an article called The Community Top 8. And in doing this, I realized that the MTG Community Cup is generally for people that are good at playing Magic online. They're streaming people and people that have done really, really good things in online tournament play, and sometimes community members too. But there's a lot of people out there that are doing really innovative, community-minded things. So teaching kids to play in an after-school program in the inner city to keep them off the streets, off drugs, what have you. No one will ever know about this except for maybe three or four players at their local store. And they're like, oh, yeah, Tim does that once a week. It's a super cool thing. But they don't get recognized by the general Magic community. And that sucks because it's so much more important than just a tournament that we get to play in. It's all of these really good works that are happening. The charity tournaments from Raya, which were amazing. But that's just one thing. So I started a contest to say, all right, we're going to find the top eight people. Had a nomination form. And it still goes on for a couple weeks here. It's two more weeks. And to say, I need to find people in foreign countries. Who's doing crazy things in Norway? Who's playing Magic when it's dark 23 hours a day in Finland? Who's the Japanese person doing crazy works working with inner city something? And I want to recognize them. We're going to give them visibility. And for the GP Las Vegas, the giant Modern Masters event, there's actually going to be a event for them. It's going to be an invite-only event, and I can't say anything more on it other than that, but it is will be the most valuable thing for them of anything that they receive other than, you know, a couple things that we can give them, and that will be utterly stellar to anyone that can make it there.
Yeah. Now, you indicated that the response may not have been as great as you were looking for, and you thought that might have something to do, like you posed the question of popularity versus relevance. How did that tie into that?
So, Ant and I have talked about this, you know, a little bit to say, what does it mean to be Magic famous or Magic relevant? Mm-hmm. Whereas, if you're in Magic R&D, you're immediately Magic famous. Though you're not always relevant to conversations or impact into day-to-day things or really helpful in a community sense because you can't really do anything outside of work. But everyone knows you are. The same could be said for any tournament organizer to say, you know, everyone knows who you are. I'm going to nominate you because you run great tournaments. But do they run better tournaments than other organizers? Do they run impeccable tournaments that are life-changing? I don't know, and I'm really grappling with that idea of Ant and I are talking Vorthos. You know, we talk snack time. We write columns. I am not famous at all, and I'm barely popular, not even. But in my subsect, I'm pretty freaking relevant. Mm-hmm. But I can't find the people that are relevant to their own subsect without them being Magic famous, Magic popular, and thus they're not showing up in the nominations. Right. And I don't know how to find them.
I think the other small little bump was that a lot of people were kind of like nervous about what they thought was a requirement on the form. Like right. They thought that they had to put in like name, address, phone number, like social security number, zip code, dress size, like whatever. You know what I mean? And they okay, all right, I exaggerated a little bit.
Mine's a 10.
But I mean, people got
Mike, you totally derailed me, by the way. Jeez, I had a good point.
Every time. But it, that sort of thing, you know, you could really limit people to say, well, I'll just nominate every person I can think of. But really, right, it's right. There has to be some sort of validation tool to be like, this person's real. If we send them an invite to something, they will receive it, instead of, oh, we have to follow up with oodles of people to be like, is this person a real person? Do we have to do research on them? Instead of, if you're going to take the time to really nominate someone, they're going to be really fantastic. Mm-hmm. They will. But
I have to admit, I was a little hesitant or a little leery when you first mentioned the, you know, the popular versus relevant discussion, because a lot of times when that discussion is had, it's usually meant to discredit somebody, or as if to say, you know, well, you're really popular, but that doesn't mean you're relevant. And I was like, oh, I hope he's not going there with this. And
No, I almost went into the backwards way to look at it, to say, what if you do incredible things, but you don't CC people or tag people, or, you know, what if you don't know what heavy meta even is? Mm-hmm. Does that mean you're never going to become part of the conversation, even though you're doing crazy deck building, or you're altering out of your freaking mind, or you're making an Etsy store that's really changing just the bags we carry to events? Mm-hmm. And if you don't do these tiny little things and pay your respects and, you know, make a hashtag called Irwinning, meaning having a lot of kids, like an Irwin or something, you know, you don't gain that traction, and you don't necessarily get the respect or get the visibility you definitely deserve. And I talked about this with Aaron, with you, to say a lot of people can get discredited really quickly, where they love the game, they love interacting, but they can't find a foothold. They can't find a stickiness on Twitter or on Reddit or on the forums that don't work anymore, or in their local play group, and then they disappear and they play frickin' Yu-Gi-Oh! And then they stop playing entirely.
And see, I've experienced the opposite, where being on the Community Cup team, you know, there were some of us on the team who got accused of, who are you? Why are you here? What have you done,
sure,
you know, to be there? So I've experienced the opposite. As somebody who, you know, could be described as Magic famous, I get the opposite accusation of, yeah, people know you, but how are you relevant?
Sure.
And it's interesting to hear the opposite of the people who are very relevant but can't quite get that grasp.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm in the opposite boat, where I'm trying to prove that I'm relevant and that I'm not just a loud voice on Twitter, or that I'm not just somebody who's had a lot of Hall of Famers on. It's like the grass is greener.
It's an interesting point, and I think it's finally become an aspect of the community that they have to really struggle with and grasp with. I mean, the game wasn't that popular up until a couple years ago, where it exploded again, and social media has really fed into that, where every troll can get a voice.
Yeah.
But there's actually people now that are saying, no, sit down, shut up, take that crappy-ass anime naked playmat the hell out of here. There's people that really do that now all the time, whether it's online or in person. But you're always going to have a couple trolls that are, you know,
yeah,
discrediting people doing good work. So I'm trying to find more ways to really give them some sort of props that they need. And if I have to do community contests to do them once a year, cool, I can get more free swag, I can do whatever the hell I want in that aspect. But I can't.
Well, you're also discovering that it's harder to bring people up than it is to tear them down. And that's why we see,
yeah,
so many trolls, and that's why we see so many downvotes on Reddit, because that's the easy thing to do, you know. And that's not to say that you shouldn't do it, but I think, you know, people don't want to put in that effort to support someone and prop them up. You know, it's easier to tear them down.
Well, that's arguable. I mean, every other week there's some sort of GoFundMe or something, whatever. Help me go to this Grand Prix, and I'm like,
help me make an egg salad.
Yeah.
You said something really funny. You know, you mentioned how there was this struggle now that Magic is becoming popular. I actually don't personally feel there is a struggle. You know, I've sort of taken myself out of the ring when it comes to the, you know, the relevance battle. You know, the way I like to rationalize it was, you know, those of us that made it on the Community Cup this year or this past year, there were people out there who thought that we mattered and who thought that we were relevant.
Yeah.
And that was good enough for me. And that's not to say that I don't appreciate people, but I don't chase it anymore. You know, if some people are into me, great. If they're not, that's fine too. But I feel like by feeling like I have to justify myself to the community at large, I'm almost disregarding the people who already view me as relevant. Does that make any sense?
Well, ask Ant that question.
Okay.
Why? Wait, why? What? Why because, did you ask me that?
Because you're newer to this.
Okay.
Because
I'm not like chasing being relevant.
No, I don't think you are at all. But I think Ant is you're hitting this point where jumping into flavor text teams, you're doing pretty damn well in them. You're creating great content that people are finding resonant. You're doing a successful cast. It's a couple of things of, you know, I'm feeling better about what I'm putting out there. I'm putting better content. And my follower count on Twitter, i.e. the one effect that I can see of, oh, I'm doing good things. Because we don't know who the hell listens to iTunes podcast. I don't know the numbers. I don't know the data.
Yeah, I have no idea.
No clue.
I don't either, I've asked that way.
I've asked Stibs to, like, try to give us some form of feedback, and I'm just like, and then I was like, you know what, I don't even care. I just don't want it.
Yeah.
I don't need, because it's not, like, even if he told me, it wouldn't change
anything
how we did the show anyway. So I just don't care. Like, I just don't even want to know.
I mean, the bottom line for me is as long as there are people who find me relevant, that's who I, you know, I like to say this, I like to give this piece of advice to people, and sometimes it sounds snobby, and I don't mean for it to be that way, but I think of my life in terms of two groups of people. There are the nobodies and there are the somebodies. And I don't mean who society tells me should be those people. But, you know, I have people that are my somebodies. And those are the people that I look to. I want them to be proud of me. I don't want to let them down. It is their opinion that I care about. And then there are the nobodies, where if you don't like me or you don't like something I've said, you're just not on the list where I care. And I'm not going to be a jerk about it, but I just can't be bothered with that. Yeah. And when I think of things like relevancy, there are people who I know listen to the show and listen to me and truly love me. And those are the people that I consider my somebodies. And I can't worry about the nobodies. I just can't. I can't. So if they don't find me relevant, that's really okay, you know. But the somebodies do. The people on my somebody list do. And that's who I'd rather spend my energy on. That's who I'd rather spend my thoughts on. And you just kind of have to stick with your somebodies. Because if you spend too much time looking at that nobodies list, you're never going to get anything done. And you're always going to be, you know, held back. And what did I do? What did I say? You can't. Like, that's a list you've got to make, and you've just got to tear up that half of the list and focus on your somebodies.
But at that point, though, if you have people that dislike you or your work, even if you have trolls, if someone wants to mix their haterade in the morning, lob it at you, that is the point when you've become relevant. I literally felt this one week in an article that I wrote something that was outside what I normally do. It was not flavorful, but it was community-minded, but it got too close to tournament play, and a couple pros commented on it, and it's never happened to me. I mean, very few people comment on my articles. I get it, but I know people read them. But pros don't care. But when a couple of them did and said, this is horseshit, or this is terrible, I think even LSV said something was, oh, this is marginal, or something like that. I was like, holy shit, people actually read this. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Like, it was an immediate realization of, oh, I don't care. But I never had the ability to really have a pro and con. There was no visceral reaction at all other than, oh, you did a good job this week. It was fun. Great. But then again, my mother looks at my articles every now and then. And she's like, oh, it's kind of neat. And I'm like, oh, yeah, that's right. I have parents who can Google. Oh.
Well, even when we had our first episode and Mike sounded like he was like in a fish tank,
fishbowl,
fishbowl, whatever. Yeah, I had out of maybe like the 8 comments that we got, 7 of them were just bashing our audio and saying like that it sounded awful, right?
Sure.
And I was talking to my cousin about it, and I was telling him like, man, I'm kind of bummed. Like, our first episode didn't go over well. Like, everyone was complaining about the audio, whatever. And he was like, no, dude, don't look at it that way. You have 7 people who wanted your show to sound better so badly that they felt the need to complain the internet and tell you to get your shit together so that when you had the next episode, they could listen to it and have it sound better. You want that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I certainly had a realization similar to that this past week. I got the bright idea to do an AMA.
I think I was
on that with you.
So I got the idea to do an AMA, and I have to admit, you know, I did a really good job of wrapping myself in this bubble of naivete with regards to how big the show had gotten and things like that. Like, I don't know my numbers. I don't know my subscribers. I purposely don't want to know. And for a long time, I sort of, you know, I didn't really realize how big the show had become. You know, I'd been on the Community Cup and all of these things had happened, but it still hadn't hit me. And I did the AMA, and for the first couple of hours, it was pretty positive. It was, hey, we love the show. Got any advice for new podcasters? Who was your favorite guest? Whatever. About 4 hours in, somebody left a post, and this was somebody who I apparently played against 2 standards ago. I remember the event. I remember the deck. This is when Thragtusk was legal.
Thragtusk.
This was 2 seasons ago. And I apparently had tilted on this person so badly that they never forgot about it. They said that I was the rudest person they'd ever faced, that the Magic community should be embarrassed to have me represent them at the Community Cup, that I was toxic, and that I should basically be ashamed of myself.
It's a lot of words.
It is. And I'm not saying that I don't remember it happening. It did. I'm sure that it did. But it was just, it really hit me in that moment where I just assumed that I was another person. I assumed that I was another face, that I was forgettable, that, you know, I would never see this person again, that they would never remember me. And I left an impact on this person. And mind you, it was a terrible one. But at that point, it really hit me that I'm not just another face in the crowd and that people do look to me to be better and that I am more visible than other people.
Yes.
And there is a little bit of a responsibility there. And it took something like that to really shake me out of this bubble, because for so long, I didn't look at my stats. I didn't look at my followers. I didn't care about that. I just assumed nobody listened to the show. And it's funny that it took that moment, 2 years of recording the show, to be like, holy shit, I am a public figure. and then somebody else commented as far back as Omaha, which was 2 weeks ago, and was like, yeah, you were kind of hateful to me too. And then other people started dogpiling me, and rightfully so. You know, I did do those things, but that thread really kind of jolted me out of my haze, where it's like, you really can't do that anymore. And since then, I've made a drastic effort to not do those things anymore. And I really get it now, where it's like, I can't do that anymore. Like, I am a public figure. People expect better from me, and you can't do that.
Aaron,
and
you have paparazzi now. Like, you have to wear underwear out of your
Oh my God.
But, you know, just like I said, just some people, you know, it just didn't hit me. And that was something where, you know, going back to popularity, and this isn't to sound cocky or full of myself or anything, but I really, it finally hit me, where it's like, you got to be better.
That's interesting.
I mean, that's something that Mike and I were talking about before, like, we were saying that it's better to have somebody get upset than have them not care at all. Like, apathy would be way worse, you know? So you can almost look at that as, like, those are fans who they want you to just improve and be better, and like, they care so much that they're willing to comment. You know what I mean? Like, and it's helping you grow. So that's a good thing. You know, that's great. Like, how much worse would it be if they never did that? Because then you would never know, and then maybe you would never get better. Like, who knows? You know, so
that is like the most hurtful thing someone can say to you is like, well, what do you think of my work? It's like, well, I don't love it or hate it.
Yeah, I'm not moved at all.
I nothing it. It's like, oh my God. Like, you feel so insignificant that I'd rather have someone hate my face all day than to just say, oh, you do what? Oh, okay, well, I don't care. It's probably not very good anyway. Like, that's way, way worse for me. So I don't know. I think it's a future article. It'd be a great thing to say. When you hit a certain threshold, there's a PR – public relations, kind of media relations training that you really have to scrutinize yourself and really pay attention to what's going on.
Even when the AMA was happening, you know, once the negative comments started pouring in, you know, I did have Adrian and I did have Stibbs in IMs, and I was just like, what do I say? Like, what do I do? Because I knew that that was a PR moment.
Yep.
And I did apologize, and I sincerely meant the apology, but I had to really resist going to my natural place of taking off the hair, taking off the earrings, running across the stage holding a shoe, and reacting like that. I was like, no. Someone's lobbied an accusation at me. All of the internet is watching. Don't fuck this up.
Yeah.
And I'm amazed at how many people – there were even a couple people yesterday during the Alicia news that were sort of behaving a little – off the cuff, where it was like, you've got 3,000 followers, like, you might want to stop now, like, you're not quite getting it, that this is bad PR for you.
And that's happened a couple times, that other people are like, I don't get the problem here. It's like, oh, honey, we need to help you. And there's like, it just doesn't stick. And it's always on Twitter, and they're like, I don't understand the problem. Like, you fucking numbskull. You gotta step back. There's people that will step back. Listen, Muppet, this is what you need to do.
Yeah, and check, see, I'm very aware of that. Yeah, I'm very aware of that, where, you know, when the Reddit thing happened, I didn't type a single thing until Adrian told me what to say, Stibbs told me what to say, Stibbs at one point said, don't go back there, like, don't look at it anymore, there's nothing more you can do, and I'm so grateful that I have people I can count on to sort of keep me on that path, and I just wish more people had that, because they just don't seem to get it, where you want them to have the realization that I had, where you can't do those things anymore, and I'm always amused by people who just haven't had that breakthrough yet.
That's so a Gathering Magic thing. Like we have our own little culture. That's totally a thing. I mean, even Trick had that when Trick Jarrett was our editor of, all right, I'm gonna coach you through this. I'm gonna help you figure this out. Like, I love that ability to have that, to have really someone in your corner at any given time. I wish people, anytime you win a Grand Prix, someone would sit you down and be like, okay, this is what you're gonna do now, and really teach you the
role. Now you're in the spotlight, so now you have to think about, like, all the other, you know, people at home who are gonna look up to you as a figure in, like, the community. You know, you're not just like another player. Like, now you have a face and a voice, and, like, you can't just
transcended. No F-bombs unless they're funny.
Yeah, right.
F-bombs. Those are cool.
Well, I don't think GM does it in a controlling way. Well, like, it's not like Stibbs is watching my feed and going, at 7:30 a.m. you said this, you shouldn't have said that.
Sure.
The door is open for me to come to him.
Right.
If I do come to him, though, he is willing. He is listening. Right. The advice he gives is not mandatory. It's not, I'm telling you to do this and you have to. It's, here's what I think you should say. And then I can choose to either, you know, take that advice and follow through or not. It doesn't feel like it's restrictive or forced or anything.
Right.
But it's still nice to have, because I just see so many people that don't have that. Or if they do, they're not listening to it. And
that's a great thing that people don't probably know about Gathering Magic, is we sometimes get feedback. It's almost like a little bit into making the sausage of, you know, it would be really great, you should try to weave this in. This might work a little better for you. Or try this sort of thing. It's worked over here, and you know what? You might enjoy that. Or what about this idea? Try that out.
Yeah. And because it's not forced, that makes me more inclined to do it.
100%.
Yeah. Right. Absolutely.
Yeah. So if anybody has enjoyed listening to you two on the show and they want to know more about you or Snack Time, how can they find you? How can they get a hold of you?
Starting with alphabetical with Ant.
Yeah.
Yo, Ant.
Yo, Mike. Yeah, so they,
how can they find you?
So they, I am on Twitter at AntMTG, and I also write a weekly article on Gathering Magic. Comes out usually on Wednesday, which is our flavorful day. Sometimes it'll, you know, bounces around a little bit, like Tuesday or Thursday or something. But I'm there, you know, every week. They can feel free to email me as well. I got my email on all my articles. And also on Snack Time. So we have the Snack Time cast Twitter and Snack Time emails. So they can feel free to hit us up there too.
And the show is on iTunes.
The show is on iTunes. That's
Snack
right.
Time cast. To find me, you can just Google Magic Art Mike, and I will pop up somewhere. One of my articles will. Or you can
just Google Magic Wiener Dog.
Oh, the weens.
Milk Dog, yeah.
So I guess I do have 3 wiener dogs, which one of the players pointed out, which is 90% of my Instagram, which looks amazing. But I'm at Vorthos Mike on Twitter, and I'm easy to find. I have a lot of N's in my last name, so you can find me easily if you need to find an art question out there.
Rhymes with cinnamon, baby.
I got flavor.
Oh my goodness, you two are dripping with flavor. Well, this has been a lot of fun, you guys. Thank you so much for coming on the show and for telling me about the show and for dishing about the community with me. And I hope to have you guys back on. I think you're doing good work, and I encourage you to really keep it up.
Thank you for having
us. Thanks for having us on.
Absolutely. Oh. And if anybody's in, huh?
And I have to always put the invite out. Aaron, anytime there's something in Minneapolis, you're mighty welcome to stay with me, the missus and the wiener dogs.
Yes, yes. You and, like, half the meadery. I've been, like, adopted by the meadery all of a sudden. So.
And I'm in Jersey, so.
Joy-Z? We're going to go to a magic event?
Which I never thought I would ever say. I was born and raised in Pennsylvania, and I even used to rip on Jersey a little bit, and now, ironically, I live here. So.
Well, Jersey reps pretty hard on my show. You know, I just had Nathan Holt on. He's a Jersey boy. Patrick Sullivan. There's a lot of Jersey love on the show.
So I'm a new Jersey.
Jersey. I always say if I go to an event in Jersey, I want to be like Gerard Fabiano's wet dream. I want crunchy curls. I want hoop earrings.
Ooh,
I want to pierce my nails. I want to, you know, I'm going to play a bridge from below, but too. I'm going to really get Rosie Perez with it.
Orange spray tan, the works.
Right? You know, right? Yeah. if I go to Jersey, I will not, I have to play the part.
Oh,
so.
My gosh.
So if anybody's enjoyed what you've heard here on the Deck Tees, you can always find the show first and foremost on GatheringMagic.com. The show is on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. Please subscribe and leave me a review and some stars. You can keep up with the show on Twitter at the Deck Tees. You can follow me at Original Estrus, and you can email the show at thedecktees@gmail.com. Thank you all so much for listening, and please take care of yourselves, okay? Bye.